3 o'clock, and time now to go live to the Royal Albert Hall for the first of today's proms. It's introduced by Ian Skelly.
Yes, a very good afternoon to you. Welcome to the Royal Albert Hall, where all the world is about to go on stage. We're going on a whistle-stop tour to the four corners of the earth in the company of the Northern Sinfonia and friends. Family and friends, in fact. This orchestra is going to be joined by the BBC Proms Family Orchestra and Chorus later, which is a large group of musical enthusiasts who range in age from 8 right through to 80, and they're going to entertain us with a whole variety of sounds, some of them very familiar, some of them, I promise you, less so. We also have some special guest artists to add to the international mix this afternoon, among them a young Montenegrin sensation, a guitarist who came to the Royal Albert Hall one day when he was still a music student and vowed that day to play a concert here. Well, he's now an international star. He's Miloš Karadaglić, and he's spent weeks, months, in fact, at the top of the classical music chart with the two CDs that he's released so far, and he's now about to achieve that long-held ambition of playing live in the Royal Albert Hall. We'll also enjoy the unique sound of the vocal group The Blind Boys of Alabama making their first appearance in London, and the sound of the veena played by a protege of Radio 3's World Roots Academy, Harry Sivan Isan. It's going to be a thrilling ride, I can promise you, this afternoon. Well, our guide on stage today is Radio 3's Louise Fryer, so I'll let her explain more when she appears after an opening salvo from the Northern Sinfonia. And our grand journey begins with a suitably grand and thrilling overture. It's going to be a postcard from Dvorak's homeland. And here to guide the Northern Sinfonia through Dvorak's best-known Slavonic dance, surely, this afternoon, is our conductor for today, Stephen Bell.
Well, that was the very first Slavonic dance by Dvorak. He came from a place called Bohemia that you won't find on a map these days. These days it's called the Czech Republic, but it's a very beautiful place full of deep, dark forests and craggy mountain ranges. And those are the images that I picture when I imagine a musical postcard from Dvorak. I'm Louise, I'm your tour guide for our fantastic whistle stop tour right around the world this afternoon. And helping us do that, we've got all kinds of special guests. In the second half of the prom, we're going to be hearing from the American Deep South, from the legendary Blind Boys of Alabama. And we're also going to be hearing from the BBC Proms Family Orchestra and Chorus. They're here in London, the home of the Olympics and the Paralympics this year. Some of their members are blind and partially sighted, and they are all proof that everybody is capable of making fantastic music. In the first half of the prom, to help us do that, we're going to be joined by Harry Sivanesan and friends. They're going to be sending us a postcard from Sri Lanka, which is in the beautiful Indian Ocean. And we're also going to be joined from Montenegro by Miloš Karadaglić, who'll be bringing us a postcard from Spain. And then these guys behind me are going to be taking us just about everywhere else. So let's find out a little bit more about them. Who's in charge here? There's an awful lot of them. Who's in charge? Okay, who are you? What do you do?
Hello, I'm Bradley Creswick. I'm the leader of the Northern Symphonia.
Right. Bradley, tell me, what does a leader do? What's your job?
Basically, when I play, they just follow me. Oh, yes, you do!
Well, we'll find out. But if you're in charge, who's this guy who's waving his hands around at the beginning?
Well, I thought I'd just sit in your deck chair, Louise, for a couple of minutes and have a quiet couple of moments after that exhausting Dvorak. I don't know who's in charge. Is Bradley in charge or is the conductor in charge? I'm not sure. In fact, the BBC did a whole programme, didn't they, Maestro, to dispel the myth of whether a conductor is in charge of an orchestra. I'm not sure.
Well, you're Stephen Bell, aren't you? And you're also a player, but when you're up there conducting, it seems to me you're a little bit like a pilot in that you've got all these instruments in front of you and you're making sure it's all going at the right speed, the right pitch.
I guess that's a pretty good analogy, really. On my score, I've got the whole picture, if you like. I've got to do the vertical reading, scanning along, if you like. Not just making sure that everything starts and stops together, but stays together in between. Of course, all these wonderful players can perfectly well play their part, but I guess, and they do perform without a conductor on many occasions, I'm sure, but certainly in a programme like this, where there are many, many different styles, perhaps one person taking the helm.
So what kind of style are we going to hear next?
We're going to go much more relaxed for our next piece of music, a piece of English music written just 100 years ago, and it's one of those charming miniatures by Frederick Delius. Delius perhaps best known for those lovely little tone poems, just a 5-minute piece that's so, so descriptive. And in it, you'll hear Bird Call. James, our principal clarinet, is just going to give us a clue as to what bird we're going to hear. I think we may have guessed.
Anyone know what that is? A cuckoo. Excellent. So this is Delius on hearing the first cuckoo in spring.
Thank you.
Did you hear the cuckoo? Everyone hear the cuckoo? Excellent. That was Frederick Delius, who was an English composer. He wrote that piece in France, and he was actually musing on a Norwegian folk song, so he ticked loads of destinations with that one piece. Now, I noticed some visiting instruments over here that didn't get used in the first piece or the second piece, but we're going to hear about them now. Harry, let me come and join you beside, well, what is this? You tell me.
It's called a vina. I like to think of it as the mother of the sitar.
And how do you play it? I mean, it's a stringed instrument, but you don't tuck it under your chin like Bradley when he's playing the violin.
No, it sits on my lap as I'm sitting cross-legged. It's plucked, and it's there's a lot of pulling to make glissandos.
And I noticed that you've got some interesting additions to your nails here.
yes, I have a couple of plectrums, but traditionally you would grow your nails and play, but sometimes steel plectrums do the trick as well.
Now, you've got a couple of other instruments either side of you. Tell me about those two.
We have a couple of percussion instruments from North and South India. So we have a tabla from North India, but also a traditional classical South Indian instrument, a mridangam, which is a two-headed drum. And then on the other side of me, we have a harmonium, which is a reed instrument in essence.
And tell me why you wanted to learn to play the vina. I mean, you were born in London, is that right?
Yeah, that's right. I was very little, I was 8, and my mum wanted me to learn the violin. However, when we went to the school, there was no violin teacher on the day, and I saw a vina and I just thought it looked interesting, so I sat down.
And you've really taken it from there, because you're one of the best vina players in the country now.
that's arguable, but yeah.
Well, you're very modest. But you've used the instrument to compose a very special piece for us this afternoon, haven't you?
That's right, yeah. They asked me to do a postcard of Sri Lanka, and Sri Lanka's seen some very hard times in the past few years, so I just wanted the piece to reflect the fact that even at the end of struggle, there's always hope.
And you're not going to play it just the three of you?
Yes, we're very fortunate to be accompanied by a quintet today. And also Steve will be conducting it, so we're very lucky.
Harry, thank you very much. So I'm going to step out of your way, and I'm going to hand over to Stephen Bell. And this is called Colour, which means time.
Thank you. பறிபுற நித்தப்பதும் வைத்து பைரவி திக்கக் கொடுக்க கழுவொரு கருதார திக்கு பறியட்ட பைரவி தொக்கு தொகு தொக்கு தொகுதக சித்திரப்பவரிக்க திருகுதக என போத கொத்துப்பறகட்டு கலமிசி குக்கு 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 கொத்திப்பது புக்க புதுமது முது கூகை பொற்றுப்பன்ற குற்றவுணரி வெற்றி பலியிட்டு குலகிரி குத்துப்பது ஒத்து பொறுவல பெருமாளே பொறுவர பெருமாளே பொறுவர பெருமாளே.
That was Hari Sivanisan and friends. Hari singing as well as playing the veena, and that was his postcard from the paradise island of Sri Lanka. Now, Stephen Bell, where are we heading next?
Can't quite follow that, can you? Absolutely wonderful, wonderful music and very atmospheric. We're going to up the tempo a little bit and bring you a dance to ward away evil spirits.
Where's it from?
We're from the Spanish composer Manuel de Falla from ballet music. This is entitled The Ritual Fire Dance.
Ooh, I hope we've had health and safety clearance. Off you go. That was The Ritual Fire Dance from Love the Magician, El Amor Brujo, by Manuel de Falla, and conjuring the magic there, Stephen Bell, with the wizardry of Northern Sinfonia. Now, when I think of the sounds of Spain, I think of fantastic trumpet and brass sounds, all sorts of percussion, but also this instrument here. This is Miloš Karadaglić. Miloš, what are you carrying?
I'm having a classical guitar with me.
Now, you're not from Spain, are you?
No, I'm very proudly from Montenegro.
So what drew you to want to play such a Spanish instrument?
Well, I think that guitar is one of the most intimate and most beautiful sound-producing instruments. It's an instrument which really allows you how to explore your emotions when you play it, and I love it for that so much. And it's also the most popular instrument in the world in different shapes and forms, but I chose the classical one.
Now, you're going to play a particularly emotional piece for us, aren't you? Tell me about it.
Yes, I will play the second movement, the famous Adagio from Concerto de Aranjuez, which is one of the most loved and most beautiful pieces of music ever written in the world. And it's been voted so many times the most loved piece of classical music. It's a piece which Rodrigo wrote when he was very heartbroken because his wife lost his baby. And he was very, very sad. And actually, the way he writes this piece is almost like every note is a sigh.
And it's not just the guitar that features prominently. There's another instrument too, isn't there?
Yes, there is korangle, which we have a wonderful korangle here today. Korangle in this piece is almost as important as the guitar because it also carries the tune like the guitar.
You're going to play a concerto. What exactly does that mean?
Concerto is where a soloist plays the solo part and then together with an orchestra. But concerto doesn't necessarily mean that the orchestra is accompanying the soloist. It means like it's chamber music on a large scale most of the time. And it's always fun to play a concerto, and it's always fun to play with such a great orchestra like the Northern Sinfonia today.
Well, thank you very much. We're going to hear it. I'm going to let you take your seat, and you'll need just a few moments, won't you, to tune up and make sure that everyone's playing together. So this is the Concierto de Aranjuez. It's by Rodrigo, and the soloist for us is Miloš Karadaglić.
Thank you.
Well, I don't know about Love the Magician, but that was completely spellbinding. That was the middle movement of the Concierto de Aranjuez by Joaquin Rodrigo, which is easy for some to say, and it was played by Miloš Karadaglić. Now, I suspect if we give him a really big BBC Family Proms cheer, he might play us a little bit more. Should we try that? Let's give him a big cheer. Miloš, apart from the fact you've just made my afternoon, that was absolutely sensational. But you're going to play a little bit more for us, aren't you? What are you going to play now?
I will play a piece which is a special preview of my solo concert here on the 25th of September. You see how many seats there are here. So I will play a very cool samba piece, Batucada by Savio.
So this is from Brazil. Miloš, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Well, I'm left wondering if we got him back for another encore where he'd kiss me next. But anyway, that was a Batucada from Brazil, and it was played by Miloš Karadaglić. Now, whether I'm in Rio or Lima or La Paz or even here in London, a great way to cool off on a hot summer's day is by having an ice cream, and there'll be a chance to do that very shortly. But we've got one more destination before our interval. Where are we going now?
We're off to a destination where I suspect many of us have been on holiday this year, and that is France. We're with the music of Georges Bizet.
And it's another dance?
It is another dance, originated in the south of France. It's called a farandole, And the tradition was that it was a drum and a flute that led the dancing. And that's exactly what you hear after this stately introduction.
So Stephen Bell and the Northern Sinfonia are going to play for us the Farandole from La Lésienne by Bizet. And I'll see you after the interval.
The evocative music of Georges Bizet, the Farandole, from the second of his suites of music for a play all about the Lady of Arles, La Lésienne. Stephen Bell conducting the Northern Sinfonia, bringing the first half of this Bank Holiday Monday matinee prom to a close. And very much a family prom. Some very small children in the arena dancing when the music gets lively. I think we've got some possible ballet stars of the future in the Royal Albert Hall for us this afternoon. Well, stay with us on Radio 3 for a brand new orchestra and chorus making their proms debut here at the Royal Albert Hall and giving something of a world premiere too. Why not go the whole hog, I say? And bringing a flavour of the Mississippi to the proceedings this afternoon, we'll have gospel music by a rather unique band, some of the best in the business, the legendary Blind Boys of Alabama. But as Louise suggested from the stage, the ice cream vendors are going to be pretty busy in the next 20 minutes or so. So why not treat yourself to one if you're listening to BBC Radio 3 and settle back to listen to a short story, which is very much in keeping with the theme of this prom. Indira Varma reads Catherine Mansfield's classic 1921 story, The Voyage, the tale of a young girl's journey into an unknown future. On board an overnight ferry, in the Straits of New Zealand.
The Picton boat was due to leave at 11:30. It was a beautiful night, mild, starry. Only when they got out of the cab and started to walk down the old wharf that jutted out into the harbour, a faint wind blowing off the water ruffled under Fenella's hat, and she put up her hand to keep it on. It was dark on the old wharf, very dark. The wool sheds, the cattle trucks, the little squat railway engine all seemed carved out of solid darkness. Here and there, on a rounded woodpile that was like the stalk of a huge black mushroom, there hung a lantern. But it seemed afraid to unfurl its timid, quivering light in all that blackness. It burned softly, as if for itself. Fenella's father pushed on with quick, nervous strides. Beside him, her grandma bustled along in her crackling black ulster. They went so fast that she had now and again to give an undignified little skip to keep up with them. As well as her luggage strapped into a neat sausage, Fenella carried, clasped to her, her grandma's umbrella. And the handle, which was a swan's head, kept giving her shoulder a sharp little peck, as if it too wanted her to hurry. Men, their caps pulled down, their collars turned up, swung by. A few women, all muffled, scurried along. And one tiny boy, only his little black arms and legs showing out of a white woolly shawl, was jerked along angrily between his father and mother. He looked like a baby fly that had fallen into the cream. Then suddenly, so suddenly that Fenella and her grandma both leapt, there sounded from behind the largest wool shed that had a trail of smoke hanging over it, "Whoo!" "First whistle," said her father briefly. And at that moment they came in sight of the boat. Lying beside the dark wharf, all strung, all beaded with round golden lights, the Picton boat looked as if she were more ready to sail among stars than out into the cold sea. People pressed along the gangway. First went her grandma, then her father, then Fenella. There was a high step down onto the deck, and an old sailor in a jersey standing by gave her his dry, hard hand. They were there, and standing under a little iron stairway that led to the upper deck, they began to say goodbye. "There, Mother, there's your luggage," said Fenella's father, giving Grandma another strapped-up sausage. "Thank you, Frank. And you've got your cabin ticket safe?" "Yes, dear." "And your other tickets?" Grandma felt for them inside her glove and showed him the tips. "That's right." He sounded stern, but Fenella, eagerly watching him, saw that he looked tired and sad. The second whistle blared just above their heads, and a voice like a cry shouted, "Any more for the gangway?" "You'll give my love to Father," Fenella saw her father's lips say. And her grandma, very agitated, answered, "Of course I will, dear. Go now. You'll be left. Go now, Frank. Go now." "It's all right, Mother. I've got another 3 minutes." To her surprise, Fenella saw her father take off his hat. He clasped Grandma in his arms and pressed her to him. "God bless you, Mother." And Grandma put her hand, with the black thread glove that was worn through on her ring finger, against his cheek, and she sobbed, "God bless you, my own brave son." This was so awful that Fenella quickly turned her back on them, swallowed once, twice, and frowned terribly at a little green star on a masthead. But she had to turn round again. Her father was going. "Goodbye, Fenella. Be a good girl." His cold, wet moustache brushed her cheek. But Fenella caught hold of the lapels of his coat. "How long am I going to stay?" she whispered anxiously. He wouldn't look at her. He shook her off gently and gently said, "We'll see about that. Here, where's your hand?" He pressed something into her palm. "Here's a shilling in case you should need it."
"A shilling?"
She must be going away forever. Father! Cried Fenella. But he was gone. He was the last off the ship. The sailors put their shoulders to the gangway. A huge coil of dark rope went flying through the air and fell thump on the wharf. A bell rang, a whistle shrilled. Silently, the dark wharf began to slip, to slide, to edge away from them. Now there was a rush of water between. Fenella strained to see with all her might. Was that father turning round? Or waving? Or standing alone? The strip of water grew broader, darker. Now the boat began to swing round steady, pointing out to sea. It was no good looking any longer. The freshening wind tugged at Fenella's skirts. She went back to her grandma. To her relief, Grandma seemed no longer sad. She had put the two sausages of luggage, one on top of the other, and she was sitting on them, her hands folded, her head a little on one side. There was an intent, bright look on her face. Then Fenella saw that her lips were moving and guessed that she was praying. But the old woman gave her a bright nod, as if to say the prayer was nearly over. She unclasped her hands, sighed, clasped them again, bent forward, and at last gave herself a soft shake. "And now, child," she said, fingering the bow of her bonnet strings, "I think we ought to see about our cabins. Keep close to me, and mind you don't slip."
"Yes, Grandma."
"And be careful the umbrellas aren't caught in the stair rail. I saw a beautiful umbrella broken in half like that on my way over."
"Yes, Grandma."
Dark figures of men lounged against the rails. In the glow of their pipes, a nose shone out, or the peak of a cap, or a pair of surprised-looking eyebrows. Fenella glanced up. High in the air, a little figure, his hands thrust in his short jacket pockets, stood staring out to sea. The ship rocked ever so little, and she thought the stars rocked too. And now a pale steward in a linen coat, holding a tray high in the palm of his hand, stepped out of a lighted doorway and skimmed past them. They went through that doorway, carefully over the high brass-bound step, and then down such a terribly steep flight of stairs that Grandma had to put both feet on each step. And Fenella clutched the clammy brass rail and forgot all about the swan-necked umbrella. At the bottom, Grandma stopped. Fenella was rather afraid she was going to pray again, but no, it was only to get out the cabin tickets. They were in the saloon. It was glaring bright and stifling. The air smelled of paint and burnt chop bones and India rubber. Fenella wished her grandma would go on, but the old woman was not to be hurried. An immense basket of ham sandwiches caught her eye. She went up to them and touched the top one delicately with her finger.
"How much are the sandwiches?" she asked.
"Tuppence," bawled a rude steward, slamming down a knife and fork. Grandma could hardly believe it.
"2 pence each?" she asked.
"That's right," said the steward, and he winked at his companion. Grandma made a small, astonished face. Then she whispered primly to Fenella, "What wickedness!" And they sailed out at the further door and along a passage that had cabins on either side. Such a very nice stewardess came to meet them. She seemed to know Grandma well.
"Well, Mrs. Crane," said she, unlocking their washstand, "we've got you back again. It's not often you give yourself a cabin."
"No," said Grandma. "But this time, my dear son's thoughtfulness..."
"I hope..."
began the stewardess. Then she turned round and took a long, mournful look at Grandma's blackness, and at Fenella's black coat and skirt, black blouse and hat with a crepe rose. Grandma nodded.
"It was God's will," said she.
The stewardess shut her lips, and taking a deep breath, she seemed to expand.
"What I always say is," she said, as though it were her own discovery, "sooner or later each of us has to go, and that's a certainty."
She paused.
Now, can I bring you anything, Mrs. Crane? A cup of tea? I know it's no good offering you a little something to keep the cold out. Grandma shook her head. Nothing, thank you. We've got a few wine biscuits, and Fenella has a very nice banana. Then I'll give you a look later on, said the stewardess. And she went out, shutting the door. What a very small cabin it was. It was like being shut up in a box with Grandma. The dark round eye above the washstand gleamed at them dully. Fenella stood against the door, still clasping her luggage and the umbrella. Were they going to get undressed in here? Already her grandma had taken off her bonnet, and rolling up the strings, she fixed each with a pin to the lining before she hung the bonnet up. Her white hair shone like silk. The little bun at the back was covered with a black net. Fenella hardly ever saw her grandma with her head uncovered. She looked strange. I shall put on the woolen fascinator your dear mother crocheted for me, said Grandma. And unstrapping the sausage, she took it out and wound it round her head. The fringe of grey bobbles danced at her eyebrows as she smiled tenderly and mournfully at Fenella. Then she undid her bodice, and something under that, and something else underneath that. Then there seemed a short, sharp tussle, and Grandma flushed faintly. She had undone her stays. She breathed a sigh of relief, and sitting on the plush couch, she slowly and carefully pulled off her elastic-sided boots and stood them side by side. By the time Fenella had taken off her coat and skirt and put on her flannel dressing gown, Grandma was quite ready.
Must I take off my boots, Grandma? They're lace.
Grandma gave them a moment's deep consideration.
You'd feel a great deal more comfortable if you did, child, said she. She kissed Fenella. Don't forget to say your prayers. Our dear Lord is with us when we are at sea, even more than when we are on dry land. And because I am an experienced traveller, said Grandma briskly, I shall take the upper berth.
But, Grandma, however will you get up there?
Three little spider-like steps were all Fenella saw. The old woman gave a small silent laugh before she mounted them nimbly, and she peered over the high bunk at the astonished Fenella.
You didn't think your grandma could do that, did you? Said she.
And as she sank back, Fenella heard her light laugh again.
How hard it was to turn down those stiff sheets! You simply had to tear your way in.
If everything had been different, Fenella might have got the giggles. At last she was inside, and while she lay there panting, there sounded from above a long, soft whispering, as though someone was gently, gently rustling among tissue paper to find something. It was Grandma saying her prayers. A long time passed. Then the stewardess came in. She trod softly and leaned her hand on Grandma's bunk. It's a fine night, but we're rather empty. We may pitch a little. And indeed, at that moment, the Picton boat rose and rose and hung in the air just long enough to give a shiver before she swung down again, and there was the sound of heavy water slapping against her sides. Fenella remembered she had left the swan-necked umbrella standing up on the little couch. If it fell over, would it break? But Grandma remembered too at the same time.
I wonder if you'd mind, stewardess, laying down my umbrella, she whispered. Not at all, Mrs. Crane.
And the stewardess, coming back to Grandma, breathed,
Your little granddaughter's in such a beautiful sleep. God be praised for that, said Grandma. Poor little motherless mite, said the stewardess.
And Grandma was still telling the stewardess all about what happened when Fenella fell asleep. But she hadn't been asleep long enough to dream before she woke up again to see something waving in the air above her head. What could it be? It was a small grey foot. Now another joined it. They seemed to be feeling about for something,
there came a sigh.
I'm awake, Grandma, said Fenella.
Oh, dear. Am I near the ladder? I thought it was this end.
No, Grandma, it's the other. I'll put your foot on it. Are we there?
In the harbour, said Grandma. We must get up, child. You'd better have a biscuit to steady yourself before you move.
But Fenella had hopped out of her bunk. The lamp was still burning, but night was over and it was cold. Peering through that round eye, she could see far off some rocks. Now they were scattered over with foam. Now a gull flipped by.
It's land, Grandma,
said Fenella wonderingly, as though they had been at sea for weeks together. She hugged herself. She stood on one leg and rubbed it with the toes of the other foot. She was trembling. Oh, it had all been so sad lately. Was it going to change? But all her grandma said was, "Make haste, child. I should leave your nice banana for the stewardess, as you haven't eaten it." And Fenella put on her black clothes again and they went up on deck. But if it had been cold in the cabin, on deck it was like ice. The sun was not up yet, but the stars were dim, and the cold, pale sky was the same colour as the cold, pale sea. On the land, a white mist rose and fell. Even the shapes of the umbrella ferns showed, and those strange, silvery, withered trees that are like skeletons. Now they could see the landing stage and some little houses, pale too, clustered together like shells on the lid of a box. And now the landing stage came out to meet them. Slowly it swam towards the Picton boat, and a man holding a coil of rope and a cart with a small drooping horse and another man sitting on the step came too.
It's Mr. Penready, Fenella, come for us, said Grandma.
She sounded pleased.
Her white, waxen cheeks were blue with cold, her chin trembled, and she had to keep wiping her eyes and her little pink nose.
You've got my... Yes, Grandma.
Fenella showed it to her. The rope came flying through the air and smack, it fell onto the deck. Again, Fenella followed her grandma onto the wharf, and a moment later they were bowling away. The hooves of the little horse drummed over the wooden piles, then sank softly into the sandy road. Not a soul was to be seen. The mist rose and fell, and the sea still sounded asleep as slowly it turned on the beach.
I seen Mr. Crane yesterday, said Mr. Penready. He looked himself then. Missus knocked him up a batch of scones last week.
And now the little horse pulled up before one of the shell-like houses. They got down. Fenella put her hand on the gate, and the big trembling dewdrops soaked through her glove tips. Up a little path of round white pebbles they went, with drenched sleeping flowers on either side. Grandma's delicate white picotees were so heavy with dew that they were fallen, but their sweet smell was part of the cold morning. They mounted the steps onto the veranda.
Tut-tut, your grandpa, said Grandma.
She turned the handle. Not a sound.
Walter?
And immediately a deep voice that sounded half stifled called back,
Is that you, Mary?
Wait, dear, said Grandma. Go in there. She pushed Fenella gently into a small, dusky sitting room. On the table, a white cat that had been folded up like a camel rose, stretched itself, yawned, and then sprang onto the tips of its toes. Fenella buried one cold little hand in the white, warm fur and smiled timidly while she stroked and listened to Grandma's gentle voice in the rolling tones of Grandpa. A door creaked.
Come in, dear.
The old woman beckoned. Fenella followed. There, lying to one side on an immense bed, lay Grandpa. Just his head with a white tuft and his rosy face and long silver beard showed over the quilt. He was like a very old, wide-awake bird.
Well, my girl, said Grandpa, give us a kiss? Vanilla kissed him.
Ugh! Her little nose is as cold as a button. What's that she's holding? Her grandma's umbrella.
Vanilla smiled again and crooked the swan neck over the bed rail. Above the bed there was a big text in a deep black frame. Lost. One golden hour. Set with 60 diamond minutes. No reward is offered, for it is gone forever.
Your grandma painted that, said Grandpa.
And he ruffled his white tuft and looked at Fenella so merrily. She almost thought he winked at her.
Indira Varma was reading The Voyage by Catherine Mansfield. It was abridged and produced by Justine Willett. Well, welcome back to our bank holiday matinee prom. I'm Ian Skelly with the easy job, really, sitting here in the Radio 3 box. Your main guide through the music from around the world this afternoon is Louise Fryer. She'll be back on stage in just a moment with a brand new orchestra playing a brand new piece of music, the BBC Proms Family Orchestra and Chorus. And I'm joined just before we hear it by not just one of the performers in this second half, Jason Yard, but I think it's fair to say, Jason, you're the architect of this piece, aren't you?
I could take that accolade on this occasion.
How does it work?
Basically, Lincoln Abbott, who directs the family orchestra, invited me along to write a piece, but not so much in a straightforward way. He was very clear that it was something that I would start the seeds of and the orchestra would kind of let it blossom. So it's been great rehearsing with these guys over a couple of weeks. Intensively getting into the ideas and developing them. As an improviser myself, it's quite nice to...
And you're taking us around London, but very much a contemporary London, aren't you?
Yes. The idea was London postcards. So we start off with the family basically visiting London for the first time, kind of based on the River Thames, and then we visit North London, West London, bit of carnival, which is quite fitting, and then South London and East London, and some bells in the middle, and then we're off home.
And it's fair to say also that you've also been working with the Blind Boys of Alabama, who are finishing our prom this afternoon. How did that come about, very briefly?
Thankfully, I got a call from the Beeb asking me to do some, if I'd like to do some arrangements for them, seeing as they were involved in the proms and I was already doing the family orchestra thing. So it's kind of an extension of the family orchestra thing, and then you'll actually hear the orchestra transform into a choir and sing a couple of numbers with the Blind Boys. So that was great to be able to arrange their pieces.
Okay, Jason, well, you have to go hammering back down to the piano. Thanks for joining us. Good luck with the performance.
Not at all. Thanks a lot.
Jason Yard, who is about to go back and sit at the piano. And at that point, I shall hand you over for part two of this afternoon's prom on the stage here at the Royal Albert Hall to Louise Fryer, who is weaving her way through this vast family orchestra.
Hello. I'm very glad that you've all come back. It suggests to me that you're having a good time. Is that right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah? I'm not sure I could hear that. Are you having a good time?
Yeah.
Brilliant. That's much better. Well, I really enjoyed the first half, but the second half is going to be even better. We've got our special guests from Alabama, the Blind Boys of Alabama. They'll be joining us shortly. The Northern Symphonia played so well in the first half, they're taking a slightly longer break, but we have a whole brand new orchestra behind me. This is the BBC Proms Family Orchestra. Let's hear it for them. And we also have not just an orchestra, but the BBC Proms Family Chorus. Let's hear it for them too. And standing beside me is Lincoln Abbott, who's the man who's going to direct them. Now, Lincoln, what's the difference between a director and a conductor?
Ooh, what a good question. I think it's something to do with the fact that we've spent the last few weekends working on the piece that we're about to perform for you, Wish You Were Here, and it's been my job to pull together the various parts of it and the various ideas from everyone and make it sound great.
Now, what is a family orchestra?
That's a simple one. So that's families in any shape or size from wherever you come from are invited to come and get involved in music making.
And some of these members are really quite small.
That's right. I think the youngest member of our orchestra today is all of 4 years old. So give us a wave if you're 4 years old.
That's brilliant. Sitting right up there in the percussion. And from four, you go all the way up to?
We probably shouldn't say where we go up to, but except to say there are a lot of generations of the same family involved in the orchestra. There you go.
And what are you going to play for us? Because I notice that all these players sitting here don't have any notes in front of them.
Well, that's right. It's a brand new piece. It's called Wish You Were Here. And as I say, we've spent the last few weekends putting it together, and we've got it all in our heads. We've remembered it all, I hope. So that's why we haven't got any music.
That's brilliant. And you've created it together with a poet.
That's right. It's the piece started life with poet Ian McMillan writing us some fantastic words, which were all about a family visiting London for the very first time. And then Jason Yard, wonderful sax player, composer, and arranger, who's over there on the piano. Hello, Jason. Gave us some musical ideas to work with, and it kind of started from there and has taken the shape that we'll play for you now.
Well, Lincoln Abbotts, thank you very much. Let's hear you direct Wish You Were Here.
Thank you.
That was the BBC Proms Family Orchestra and Chorus with Wish You Were Here. Let's give them one more round of applause. Now, Lincoln, lots and lots of musicians to make their way off the stage, but while they're doing that, just tell me a little bit more about the different sections. Let me just say, Lincoln is absolutely sweating here. That was a very energetic performance. But just tell me about the different sounds that we heard, because there were all sorts of different bits of London music represented.
Absolutely. Well, this family arrived in London, and the first place they went off to was North London, as you do. And there's all the sounds there of Jewish and klezmer and the sense of Turkish influence as the music got faster and faster. And then today, as I'm sure you're aware, is Carnival, just down the road. So we had some fantastic friends on the Steel Pans who came in and gave us that real flavour of Carnival and West London. Then we went off to South London. That was a groovy bit, the whole kind of Motown feel and honouring Brixton and all that went on there. And the final postcard came from East London, which started with the fantastic percussion section there with the Dole drummers and the Bangra dancing and all that kind of feel.
Well, it was great. Now, if people wished they were here on the stage with you, I guess it's too late for this year, but what about people who want to join the family orchestra next year?
Absolutely. The family orchestra, as I say, it's a great thing just because it's what it is. Families, regardless of your musical experience today, can get involved, and every single one of the BBC performing groups have their own version of a family orchestra or chorus. So wherever you're from in the UK, the chances are you can get involved.
So there are details online?
Absolutely online. Go to the BBC Performing Group's website and you'll find out. And of course, next summer we'll be back with the proms and you could be on the stage.
Let's hope so. Lincoln, thank you very much.
Great, thank
and
you.
And you had help too, didn't you, from someone waving their arms around at the back. I'm not sure if you noticed her. I couldn't take my eyes off her, I have to say. Anna, tell me what you were doing.
Well, the important thing is to make sure you really get to know the people you're working with in a project like this really well. Some of my chorus have sung before in various different choruses, like the Philharmonia Chorus or the BBC Symphony Chorus, but most of them have never sung before. And so to give them the confidence it requires to really express themselves in a really honest way, you just have to get to know them inside out so they can trust you. So really, the 4 days with for us all, Rob working with the percussion, Ali and Neil working with the strings, everyone works so closely with everyone in their team so that we're really one big band and one big family, so they can do their very best, really. That's it.
Well, that certainly came across. Now, Anna Flanagan, I'm sure I'm not the only person wishing that I could have been joining in with that singing. Did other people want to join in with some singing? That's the answer we were hoping for. So, Anna, will you take us through a bit of a vocal warm-up and then teach us something?
Definitely. In fact, before I do that, I'll do a little bit of the things that we did in the family orchestra. One of the things we did, which took our families completely by surprise, was a little bit of Bangra dancing. So some of you you might just be happier in your seats, which is fine. And those of you who are standing can join me as well. So you can all join me. The reason we did a little bit of Bangra dancing was because in our piece here, we had four little bits of musical ideas, four motifs, written by Jason Yard. One reflected North London, one reflected South London, one reflected West London, and one reflected East London. The East London one sounded suspiciously Bangra-like, which we had the Dole drums, Rob on the Dole drums there, making that big sound. So every morning we had to do some warm-ups, and the warm-up, one of them, went a bit like this. So if you're standing, in fact, I shall change that. If you're sitting and standing, you do the same thing. Can you take both your hands? And if you think I can't see you, you're wrong. I can see you. So show me two hands. Yeah. So that's 12,000 hands, right? Yeah. Can you give me a big wave? Yeah, and drop them. Yeah, way too slow. You need to drop them when I drop them, man. You're totally behind. And again, up, huh, and down, huh. And again, really swift. One, two, ha, ha. One, two, ha, ha. Yeah. So if two hands, can you turn them into sort of lotus leaves. So it's not like that. It's like that, yeah? Two hands. Can you do that for me? And can you bring your wrists to meet each other? So it's as though you're clapping your hands, like a very flappy seal. But it's actually your wrists that are clapping the hands. And we're going to go three to the right and three to the left with a huh in between each time. So it looks like this. Yes, it does. Good. And for all the radio listeners, it's hilarious in here. That's why they're laughing. Okay, so, and again, so up to the right, then up to the left. You ready? Oh, and have I got, it might be four. One, two, three, four. One, two, four, yeah? Here we go. One, two, three, four. Huh, left, 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 left. Huh, left, left, right, sorry. Left, good. Down, right, right. Magnificent. Okay, very good. Okay, we're just going to do a little bit of singing now, totally related to the banga moves. The reason we do warm-ups like that in the family orchestra is so that everyone's physically kind of engaged and inhibitions have all gone, so I'm presuming yours have, which is great. Using lots of breath now, and I mean a lot of breath. Can you all embarrass yourselves massively by going down by the riverside and down by the riverside? It's amazing. I don't think I've ever heard 6,000 voices at the same time. Let's try it again. One, two, yeah. That'd be good. Meet the band, everyone. We've got Tom Hewins on bass. Woo! We've got Jamie on kit. Woo! And this man hiding behind the piano, hiding, I say, he's a saxophonist, people, but he's pretty damn good on the piano, is Jason Yard. I'm gonna put down my golden shoes down by the riverside, down by the riverside, down by the river. I'm gonna put on my golden shoes, you, down by the riverside. Study one or more. I'm just going to teach you that little last bit, even though I don't know it very well. Ha! It goes. Study one or more. And you've got to come off the moor really quick, yeah? No hanging about, people, no hanging about. Get on with it. Study one or more. Let's try it. A one, two, three. Beautiful, beautiful. So we're going to put it with the beginning. If you'd like to sing a little louder, you are allowed. It goes, they do this. And by they, it's the Blind Boys of Alabama. Yes, it is. This is your cue. It's a cue. You don't sing. Listen to this. I'm going to put on my golden shoes. This is you. Down by the riverside. Down by the riverside. Yeah. Down by I'm going to put on my golden shoes down by the riverside, study one or more. And the next bit goes like this. This is your bass line. This is your bass line. Lots of study, no more wars. By the way, that sounded gorgeous, and we need just big sound from you all. Thank you. It goes like this. Study one or more, study one or more, study. The ending. Here it comes. And with me, study one no more. Happens three times. And again, study one no more. And another time, study one no more. Yeah. And the ending goes like this. Watch me. Study one no more. Bigger. This is your man. And I've just been asked to do if we can do the whole thing. And what Stephen Bell here will do, although he's got quite a lot going on, in all fairness, is try and turn round and bring you in when you need to come in. So we'll go from down by the riverside. Down by the riverside. Tom, Jamie, let's go. They're off. We can do it again, can we? You sure we can do it again? Okay. Down by the riverside. Let's go. Oh, one. Your cue is... I'm going to put on my golden shoes. Down. Yeah, down. Keep it up. I'm going to put on my golden shoes. Down. Study one of all. I ain't gonna. Can't hear ya.
That was Anna Flanagan. Anna, thank you so much for that. And it's going to prepare us fantastically well for the very last number we're going to hear. Anna,
great,
thank you.
Sing your hearts out. Brilliant.
And we're going to sing it after we hear the set from our very special guest. So we've been taking journeys to all sorts of destinations around the world. Now we're going to the southern states of America. So let's welcome the Blind Boys of Alabama. I'm going to tuck in here. Now, this is the very first time these guys have performed at the Royal Albert Hall, so let's give them a very, very warm welcome. And we're going to find out exactly who I have beside me. Would you like to tell me your name?
Jimmy Carter.
Jimmy Carter. And Jimmy, you've been with the band since it started, is that right?
That's what they tell me.
And when was that?
Well, the Blind Boys started out professionally 1944.
1944. Now that's some career. So, very nearly 70 years performing with the Blind Boys of Alabama. Jimmy, how did it get started?
The Blind Boys started out at the School for the Blind in a little town in Alabama called Talladega. We all met up there and started singing together, and so we decided that we would try to make a living at it. So, the rest is history.
And you specialize in a very particular kind of music, don't you?
Gospel music. That's all we do is gospel.
And can you explain for people who might not know what gospel music is, what it is?
Well, when they ask me what gospel music is, I tell them that gospel music, gospel is the good news of God, the telling of a story that Jesus died that we might live.
And can you tell me who you're going to be singing with?
Well, you mean...
Who are the boys in the band?
Oh! We have Jimmy Carter, of course. Eric McKinney. We call him Ricky McKinney. Joey Williams. Benjamin Moore.
Fantastic. And for the second part of your set, you're also going to be joined by Northern Sinfonia and some of the members of the orchestra and chorus and by our very selves. But you're going to start off with just the four of you. What are you going to sing first?
We're going to do a little song called It's Praying Time. First of all, let me thank you for your wonderful, wonderful welcome. And we love you very much. Thank you very much. It's praying time again. You're gonna need him. It's praying time again. You still want him. Can't you see the world is near the end of time? It's praying time again, my friend. I remember I didn't have no shoes on my feet, didn't have no bread to eat. I asked the Lord to show me the way.
He stepped in.
Yes, he did.
And brightened my day.
Oh, it's
praying time again. You're gonna need. It's praying time again, you should want him. Can't you see the world is near the end of time? It's praying time again, my friend.
The family prays together, stays together. If you pray, mean it from your heart. If you pray an honest prayer, the Lord will meet you there. Oh,
it's praying time again, my friend.
Well, it's
praying time again. You're gonna need him.
You're gonna need him.
It's praying time again. You should want.
Can't you see?
Can't you see the world is near?
In the time.
In the time.
Oh, it's
praying time again, my friend. Oh, yes, it's praying time again, my friend.
Well, it's praying
time again, my friend.
Well,
it's praying time again. My
friend. Thank you so much. We're going to get started now, right? This song says, people get ready, There's a train coming. People get ready, there's a train coming. Don't need no baggage, you just get on board. All you need is faith to hear the diesels humming. Don't need no ticket,
you just thank the Lord.
People get ready for the train to Jordan, picking up passengers
from coast to coast.
Faith is a key, a lock of door, and more than there's hope for all
who love the most. There's a train coming. You don't need no baggage, oh, you just
pull off the board.
All you need is just a little bit of faith to hear those diesels humming. You don't need no ticket, oh, you just
Blind Boys did a country record not too long ago, and it's the first record of this kind that the Blind Boys have ever done. We're going to sing you a song from it and see how you like it. It's a country record now. We've never done this before. And it might not sound like it now. But the song, the CD is called Take the High Road, and we're going to sing a title song. Let's Take the High Road.
We're seeing light, there's nowhere else to go. Get up and take the high road. When you feel like you're all alone, and take the high road. Oh, Lord.
Take the high road through the valley. Take the high road through the valley. Take the high road through the valley. If you want to reach the promised land.
reason. Just remember we never walk alone.
So take the high road through the valley. Take the high road through the valley. Take the high road through the valley. If you wanna reach the promised
land, there's a long and winding path we must travel to find a place that God has prepared.
The business of the journey will never.
This next song is one of the Blind Boys' premier songs. Listen as we tell you.
But now I see.
I'm Paul J. Margaret. Amazing grace. I'm talking about grace. Amazing grace. Talking about grace. Amazing grace. Talking about grace. Amazing.
Thank you. Do y'all feel good?
Yeah.
I do too. All right. We're going to do this one and we're going to be gone. This song here, a little toe tapper song. You can put your hands together, pat your feet, whatever you want to do. If you know it, you can even sing along with us. If you don't, sit back and relax and enjoy. Listen as we tell you here. Y'all put your hands together if you want to. Put your hands together. Gonna lay down my heavy burden down.
Down by the riverside.
Well, down
by the riverside.
Well,
down by the riverside.
Gonna lay down my heavy burden down.
Down by the riverside.
Ain't gonna study.
I ain't gonna
study walk.
The Blind Boys of Alabama are turning the Royal Albert Hall into a celebration of the musicality of the Mississippi. Well, that's it from the BBC Proms for now. Plenty more showstoppers to come tonight. But for now, let me hand you back to Penny Gore in Broadcasting House. Penny.
Ian Skelly, thank you. And as he said, we return to the Royal Albert Hall this evening for the Broadway Sound with John Wilson and his orchestra. That's at 8 o'clock tonight here on BBC Radio 3. Well, right now at 20 past five, it's time for In Tune with Sean Rafferty.
Yes, it is. A very good afternoon to you. Not too much good behaviour on In Tune tonight, this afternoon. Very warm welcome. I've left the BBC tartan behind in Edinburgh. Well, quite frankly, it wasn't very colourful, but we have to watch the pennies. But the Scottish connection does continue shortly in an oblique sort of way, as you will hear. And as it's not a bank holiday in Scotland, we'll stay in the groove, and wherever you are, I hope you'll stay with us till we hit Broadway at the Royal Albert Hall at 8 o'clock. Bournemouth Symphony Orchestra and Jose Sarebrier with Symphonic Dance No. 1 by Dvorak. I hope you're having a very nice bank holiday wherever you are. And I know as we've just been to Scotland, they don't have a bank holiday today, but they're always en fête. Well, my first guests come like in tune hot from Edinburgh, where we were both in a cool but creative way part of the fringe. You can still listen to that, by the way, the programme from the BBC Tent on the iPlayer. In tune, of course, embracing the main festival as well. Australian voices have forsaken their Antipodean homeland, not just for the giddy fulsomeness of Edinburgh. A select few are on tour until the 16th of December. They are made of stern stuff, and they have landed in our studio broadcasting house where they're about to perform, and they are going to be our resident voices tonight. That we've got an opera company in the wing as well. Gordon Hamilton's here with the members of the choir. Very warm welcome.
Thanks very much.
You must be on vitamin pills, I think. I can't believe the length of this tour that you're taking.
I know, it's extreme touring, and we've done this before, so we know just how hard it is, but we love it. You know, it's what we love to do, and we do it every day. We do 6 to 8 concerts a week, and, you know, it's wonderful. We love it.
Well, we're going to hear the select voice. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. I think you're originally called Six, didn't you?
Yes, well, we're about to go on tour with six singers, the Australian Voices Six, after today, in fact, starting tomorrow in Aberdeen. We just came back down from Edinburgh to London yesterday, and we're going back to Aberdeen tomorrow.
It's no distance for an Australian.
No, it's nothing. I don't know what you're all complaining about.
It's just a bus ride, really. Well, listen, we'll hear more from you later, but you are going to do an arrangement you've made of music by William Barton, and he played his didgeridoo live from the BBC Tent on In Tune in Edinburgh on Friday, and he absolutely captivated everybody. He is a real magician.
He is, indeed. He's an incredible musician, one of the best musicians I know, and a friend of ours. We love working with him. We've worked with him several times, and he lives in the next suburb along from me. And so he came along to a rehearsal once to teach us this song called Kalkadunga Yudu, which means, in the Kalkadoon language, Kalkadunga Man. And it's a song of welcome. But he was just clowning around in this rehearsal, making jokes and, you know, making funny noises. And so we just joined in, and it became this improvisation, which then turned into this arrangement. It was very much a collaborative process.
And here it is. Thank you very much indeed. We'll hear more from the singers later. Gordon Hamilton and members of the choir Australian Voices live in the studio.
Kalkadunga Yudu, Kalkadunga Marabar, Gunta Motana Billa Billa, Motana Iwoma, Kalkadunga Yudu, Kalkadunga Marabar, Gunta Motana Billa Billa, Motana Iwoma. Kalkadunga Yudu, Kalkadunga Marabar, Gunta Motana Billa Billa, Motana Iwoma, Billa Billa Inta, Billa Billa. Tickle,
Fantastic, wonderful noises. Did we get a kookaburra anyway? You might tell me later. Thank you very much indeed. Gordon Hamilton conducting Australian Voices in the studio. Kakadunga Yardu by William Barton, arranged by Gordon. And, of course, William Barton played his didgeridoo live for us on the BBC Tent in Edinburgh on Friday. You can still listen to all that on the iPlayer. Edinburgh features very much here in the mornings on Radio 3 all this week. And there's another Australian connection on Friday, live from the Queen's Hall, Richard Tognetti and the Australian Chamber Orchestra. Australian Voices will be going back to St Andrew's Cathedral in Aberdeen tomorrow. Tomorrow, a tour runs till the 26th of November, when they end up at St Martin's Church in Salisbury before going across the water to mainland Europe. 70-odd dates, and they'll be back to sing for us later. Well, you're listening to In Tune here on this Bank Holiday Monday. I stand by to find out who's won tickets for the last night of the Proms later this week. The tickets to the hottest of the season, Friday's concerts, the latest ones. Simon Rattle conducting the Berlin Philharmonic and Rutoslavsky and Brahms. Here they are with Brahms, arranged by Schoenberg, his orchestration of the Rondo alla Zingarezzi from the Piano Quartet in G minor, which Schoenberg, who loved Brahms, referred to jokingly as Brahms's Fifth Symphony.
Thank you.
Berlin Philharmonic, conducted by Sir Simon Rattle, with Schoenberg's arrangement of Brahms's Rondo alla Zingarese from the Quartet in G minor, bringing the time, well, roughly to 20 minutes to 6 o'clock. I'm not looking at the clock too carefully, I hope, on this bank holiday Monday. In tune with you until 8 o'clock tonight, and that's when we hit the tinsel town of Broadway. But back to Sir Simon Rattle and the Berlin Phil. They're at the Proms this Thursday with Ligeti, Wagner, Sibelius, Debussy and Ravel, and on Friday with more music by Brahms, the second piano concerto in B-flat with Yefim Bronfman, and the second half, it's Lutosławski's Third Symphony. On Friday, of course, there'll be the winner of our 8th Proms competition of this year's season. The question you had to answer was, with which work did Simon Rattle make his conducting debut with the Berlin Philharmonic? You had to get it right, of course, and the correct answer was Mahler's 6th Symphony. The lucky winner of a pair of tickets to that prom is Jonathan Price. And so with the 2000... I made a joke earlier saying you'll obliterate me with applause, and that's what happened. Anyway, Jonathan Price, I hope you heard that. Congratulations, and I hope you can go. Well, the season comes to a thrilling close. Our final competition, two winners each receiving a pair of tickets for the last night, Saturday the 8th of September, and you also get ferried from wherever you live in the UK and a night's feather bed in a central London hotel. As usual, pomp, circumstance, some old favourites, lots of surprises, as ever. Star-studded, including the violinist Nicola Benedetti and the tenor Joseph Kaleha. BBC Symphony Orchestra conducted by their chief conductor, Jerzy Bielaklawek. So the question for this very last chance this year, and you must answer correctly, where was Joseph Kaleha born? Where was Joseph Kaleha born? Answers by email to promscompetition@bbc.co.uk. Proms competition, that's all one word, at bbc.co.uk. That's the only email address to use, please. You can write to us, of course. Drive Time Proms Competition, BBC Radio 3, Room 1015, Broadcasting House, London W1A1AA. Drive Time Proms Competition, BBC Radio 3, Room 1015, Broadcasting House, London W1A1AA. All postal and emails by this Friday, the 31st at 5. And do include a telephone number, otherwise we won't be able to get in touch. I'll announce the winners and in tune next Monday. All terms and condition, go to the homepage. You'll find it at bbc.co.uk/radio3. So, a fantastic final night. You will have to bring your own flag, I fear, but you will get all the glory of the music. And here is the man you'll hear on the last night, sharing the soloist honours with Nicholas Benedetti, the man from, well, that's for you to decide, Joseph Kaleha. Here with Offenbach, we're in a tavern with students asking him to tell a tale of his loves. It's all about a legendary dwarf at the court of Eisenach, but his attention wanders.
L'était une fois à la cour d'Azenac.
À la cour d'Azenac.
Un petit avorton qui se nommait Clenzac.
Qui se nommait Clenzac.
Il était quoi faire un colmat que ses jambes faisaient. Clic-clac, clic-clac, clic-clac. Voilà, voilà, Clenzac.
Clic-clac,
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 clic-clac. Voilà, voilà,
Kleinsack.
Il avait une bosse en guise d'estomac.
En guise d'estomac.
Ses pieds ramifiés semblaient sortis d'un sac.
Semblaient sortir d'un sac.
Son nez était noir de tabac, que sa tête faisait. Cri-crac, 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 voilà, voilà, Kleinsack.
Cri-crac,
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 voilà,
voilà, Conto tre o tre de sa figure.
Conto tre de sa figure.
Conto tre o tre de sa figure.